It's the True Faith Podcast. This is Andrew Bolland and Norman Riley of the True Faith Podcast in their chat with former journalist Patrick Barkley about all things Newcastle United. There's been a lot of online controversy surrounding Paddy in a couple of articles he wrote back in 2014 and 15 about Ana Pardew. I just have to say before the podcast start that Paddy made contact with us. He invited Andrew and Norman, who you're going to hear, into his home to talk about Newcastle United, and has offered to come again on the podcast in the future. So we're just massively grateful to him for his time and his honesty in all of this. So I hope you enjoy the show. The lads really enjoyed recording it. We've had some great feedback so far when this was released early for patrons, and I'll let the lads take it away.
Welcome to a special edition of the True Faith Podcast. Me and Norman Riley of Exiles fame for the podcast are currently sat in Patrick Barkley's house in the beautiful area of London called Barnes. I've been breathtaken by just being by the river. It's been unbelievable. Patrick, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. And what a day. What a day. I've got to tell you that the temperature is what? 75 and it's 6:30 in the evening. We're doing this when we really should be in one of the riverside pubs. But anyway, that's enough warning from me.
Well, yes, me and Norman will be in one of those pubs very, very shortly.
I might join you.
Excellent. So, as you may have explained to you, we've had a few questions from our listeners.
Yeah, not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, well, just a few. You're a popular man. So I'm going to kick us off. So our listener and sometime participant in the podcast, Richard Smith, would like to know what are your thoughts on the old school British manager brigade being given jobs and millions of pounds to do the jobs badly? There's an accusation that the lack of analysis on performance due to personal or professional relationships by the football media contribute to this.
Yeah.
Having worked in the game both as a journalist and with some of the managers in question, what's your view on
this?
Well,
I don't understand. I wish the media had that kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not a journalist, a football writer anymore. I retired nearly 2 years ago. But, you know, obviously I'm now, you know, a full-time fan, I suppose, of Dundee Football Club. But and I love the game. I watch it all the time. I wish I didn't, but I do. So the one thing I don't understand, though, as somebody who worked in journalism for 40 years, football journalism, I don't understand how we're supposed to have any influence, because that's the worst thing about being a football writer, is that you feel as if you don't have any influence at all. And I've never been asked by a football club director who I think their manager should be. Now, there may be journalists who would say different. All I'm saying is that I was in it for 40 years, and I wish the buggers had asked me, you know, because it wouldn't have made so many blunders. But to go back to the first part of the question, you know, this managerial merry-go-round thing, I've never known it as bad as it is now, where you have people, you know, you're Alan Pardew turning up at West Bromwich when people probably felt that he'd, you know, he sort of no right to a Premier League job anymore. Sam Allardyce, who was, you know, about as welcome as a virus at Goodison. You've got, you know, there are...
Mark Hughes, yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, Mark Hughes is another great example of that. You'd have thought Mark Hughes had his time. And there's another one that I've forgotten.
Think Paul Lambert making a comeback in the Premier League.
Even if you go outside the Premier League, you know, a team with potential like Middlesbrough, Tony Pulis, Paul Lambert. You see, Paul Lambert, but with all of them, if you analyse their records, all of them have done well at more than one club. And you also say, well, at least they understand the Premier League. They know the way around. You can bring in, you know, some guy from elsewhere. There's not a lot of Jose Mourinho's, you know, who are hiding away at that club that he was at before he joined Porto. You know, there are not a lot of hidden gems who can come in and have the force of personality to take over at at a massive, massive club, which all Premier League clubs are. They're all huge on the international stage. The poorest club in the Premier League would probably be the fourth biggest club in Spain. So these are huge clubs, and you I suppose the directors feel, you know, it's time not to take any chances. But it, I can understand what you mean. If I was if I was a fan of I don't know, and Bournemouth and Eddie Howe left, well, A, I'd be devastated. B, I'd be doubly devastated if I found the next manager was going to be Tony Pulis. Yes, I would, because I know what I'm going to get from him. I'm probably not going to be relegated, but I'm probably not going to be playing as open and expansive football as Eddie Howe plays. And personally, I love Bournemouth. I love watching them because of the football they play. But how many Eddie Howes are there, you know? So it's difficult to know. All I can say is I understand why they do it, but why chairmen do it, you know. But it is frustrating for fans, and I would feel the same way too.
I mean, you'd be speaking from a fan's perspective, yeah. If and you alluded to the fact that, you know, most of those managers, as you mentioned, had success maybe at more than one club. But I suppose on a time scale, you look at someone like Lampard, for example, did well at Colchester,
yes.
did well at Norwich.
Yeah.
After that, he didn't nothing. He struggled at Villa. Don't get me wrong.
He went
to Villa, and Villa were falling down at the time, but he still did a pretty poor job there. And then after that, he had a bad time at Blackburn again, working for Venkies.
Yeah.
Bad time at Wolves, and I suppose as a Stoke fan, I would have looked at that appointment, and it would have just been so utterly uninspiring, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose again, as a football fan, you know, you look at the appointment, Southampton, Mark Hughes coming in after they've had like Koeman and Pochettino, you know, even Puel to a certain extent did a good job with hindsight. And you just, I struggle to understand how these people who they might have done well a few years ago, but they're still getting the work. And I suppose from a fan's perspective, again, you're looking at it as if to say, well, they get quite an easy ride from the media. I suppose we as football fans might feel that, you know, in the media you've got ex-players who've played alongside them or worked for them or played for them, and they don't get that kind of that harsh ride. And that kind of ties into this this next question. And it mentions London-based journalists. Yeah, I mean, it could be a national thing, but let's just focus on London right now. So we had Matt Law. I don't know if you're familiar with Matt Law's work at all. So we beat West Ham before Christmas 3-2. We'd just been on a nine-game run where we hadn't won a game.
Yeah.
Brilliant performance. Absolutely brilliant atmosphere. I was there. It was great. And then Law put a tweet out bemoaning Newcastle fans singing Rafa's name. And
what were the words? I mean, what was he saying? I mean, I can't understand why anybody would criticise fans for chanting their own manager.
Well, his issue was is that he put some along these Newcastle fans singing Rafa's name, like he hasn't gone like from nine games without a win. And I suppose to a certain extent, what a Newcastle fan might think is right. We weren't happy with Pardew, weren't happy with McLaren. And we're happy with Benitez, but you got a journalist coming up and saying, well, why are you chanting his name? He's just gone nine games without a win. I suppose from our perspective, it's a case of, well, yeah, but what we've seen with Rafa is different to what we saw with these other managers.
I don't know, but I completely agree with you there. I think that the marriage of Benitez and Newcastle has been fantastic. When you get the crowd and a manager playing together, if you see what I mean. If you've got unquestioned support for a manager, the perfect example of this season, even better than Benitez in Newcastle, which has been very impressive, I have to say, would be Klopp and the Liverpool crowd. You wouldn't know Liverpool had a board, would you? You wouldn't know Liverpool had a bloody board, because the crowd and the manager are together like they were when Shankly. I can remember when Shankly, the Kop and Shankly seemed to run the club. You didn't even know who was on the board. You knew who the players were, obviously. And that is, so Newcastle I've hit on something very, and Ashley's the luckiest man on earth, because Newcastle have hit on something very, very special. So I didn't see what Matt Law wrote, and he may well, for all I know, he might have, it's difficult to tell without seeing the context in which he wrote it. But to me, the bond, the loyalty that Newcastle fans have shown to Benitez is a huge asset for the players. The players, when the crowd and the manager are together, the players have nowhere to hide. That's key to the success of a football club. I've seen that all over the country, all over Europe. I've seen that, and it's that'll maybe take you on another question.
Yeah, well, I'll quickly get to
maybe I've half answered it.
I'll quickly touch on what you just said there, that Mike Ashley being lucky. I think in one respect he's so lucky, because never in a million years. I remember being at work when the news came through that Benitez was even thinking about coming to Newcastle.
Yeah. And you thought, yeah, pull the other one.
It's still surreal now, man. It's still surreal now, isn't it?
Yeah. But on the other hand,
well, it's been a great job for him as well.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's the fans who deserve the credit for that, not Ashley. But anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
On the other hand, I think it's woken something up in Newcastle fans that's been slightly, I think, maybe
it's given them confidence.
7 or 8 years into the Ashley reign, I think there was a bit of apathy starting to creep in. The attendances have always held up pretty well, but people were starting to become resigned to the fact that, you know, Ashley was here for the long haul. I think the McLaren one is a bit similar to what you said about Paul Lambert. I think it just left a lot of people deflated. I remember that summer we were talking about maybe getting Patrick Vieira, and I know he's got no previous experience, but that was quite an exciting prospect at the time. It was a young manager who was earning his stripes at Man City.
Just as exciting as John Barnes going to Celtic.
Well, yeah.
Let's not go into that.
Yeah. But I think the point I was getting to is that the Rafa Benitez has made Newcastle fans believe again. They believe that there's so much more than just finishing, if we're lucky, possibly 10th. I mean, Podge had that unbelievable season and wasn't backed, but I mean, the aim has been to stay in the Premier League and don't win a trophy, basically, up until that point. And I think Newcastle fans expect more now. So if, say, for example, in the summer it gets to the point where Mike Ashley doesn't give Rafa Benitez money again and doesn't support him the way he has to, I think the revolt now is going to be 10 times bigger, because Newcastle fans have remembered we can be a big club.
I think it should be, because Newcastle United, for me, I need to establish credentials here, because people say, I'm sorry, you just keep your big nose out of Newcastle, you've got nothing to do with Newcastle. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not true. As a football fan, what you'll find, And a lot of people, probably Newcastle fans, probably don't believe this. For a neutral like me, for a person who has the whole world to choose from, obviously Barcelona's my favourite second club, of course it is. But when they play football like they did. But among the others that people naturally veer towards is Newcastle United. Now, you don't know this. You don't know this. No, Newcastle fans don't know it. Because another tendency of football fans is that they never see. In 40 years of writing about football, I wrote millions of times about Newcastle fans deserving better. Because don't forget, I would go back longer. When were you born?
1990.
Yeah. I was 77,
mate. Right. So I go back to before you were born and before you were out in nappies. I go back to St. James's Park, and the reason that I talk proprietorial about it as if I was, okay, I'm not a Newcastle fan, but the reason that I have a little bit of emotional investment in Newcastle United Football Club is that when I went there, it was Gordon Lee was the manager.
And was he hated, widely derided by Newcastle fans, wasn't he?
It was a beautiful team. Tommy Cassidy, Tommy Craig, Stuart Barraclough, Aidan McCaffrey, and my favourite player, Irving
Nathan. I think he saw, did he not sell McDonald like Gordon Lee, though? I'm imagining that.
Yeah, he did, because he improved the team.
Then he went to Everton, didn't he?
He improved the team by he got the Everton job, which was a big job in those days. He was part of the so-called top five. He got the Everton job on the strength of what he did. What he did was he sold McDonald and he formed a partnership of Gowling and Cannell. Or Gowling and somebody else. But they scored more goals than they had with McDonald. And that, for me, it was a very good team. I mean, Tommy Cassidy was slowest player I've ever seen, but could pass like an angel. But my favourite player was Irving Natras, who could play right back or he could play centre back if he had to. He was a Rolls Royce of a defender, wonderful defender. So I fell in love a little bit with that team because the assistant manager, Gordon Lee's assistant,
Richard Dennis,
was a mate of mine, Richard Dennis, who later became manager, albeit for a short time. And it wasn't he wasn't cut out to be a manager. He was too nice a guy, really. Because he'd done so well as a coach with that team. Now, because Richard was a mate of mine, I became, you know, even more, you know, I'd look out for Newcastle's results even at half-time. And I keep getting to the habit. Also because of the crowd. You know, again, you'll not bloody believe this, but I'll tell you because I know and you don't. For 40 years, when journalists get round and they're having a drink in some foreign capital and we're talking about what clubs to... it's Newcastle, isn't it fantastic? When you get off the train and you walk into the city and bang, the football hits you. Wall-to-wall football hits you. The guys in the strips and talking about football, the girls talking about football, everybody talking about football. You walk through the alleyways out of the station and up, zigzagging to the town, and you look, you go into the, you see in the pubs the fans watching a pirated game because they can't get a ticket for the game, so they're watching a pirated thing in a pub. I can remember that, and all of us remember that. We so respect that, you know, the fervour for football in Newcastle. It's not unique, but it's pretty unusual to find a one team city like that. Yes, you're not going to like this, but Sunderland's pretty good too. There's a lot of us that have a real love, and all through my, I better not use that word, but on a family podcast, but all through my fucking career, I have been writing good things, nice things, not because I'm licking the backsides, the Newcastle fans, but because I like them. I like the club. I like the town and its love for football. And I can remember saying over and over again that the Premier League's strength all over the world, strongest league in the world, definitely is because of the entertainment. Maybe not the best, but the strongest and most powerful, muscular financially. Why? I don't think there's a single club that's contributed more to the Premier League's reputation for entertainment than Newcastle United because of the Keegan years.
No.
And all through the Keegan years, Jesus, the praise I heaped on Newcastle. So 40 years of bloody praise, it doesn't matter, they'll lap it up, never say thank you. But as soon as I say one thing critical, one thing critical, suddenly you're here 3.5 years after I wrote that column about bloody Pardew.
That would be the next question.
I just
taught me. We don't even need asking the question.
I wish I'd never heard that bugger's name. No, I'm only kidding.
Just tell us why you thought Newcastle fans. I think the question was, it was you were writing for the Evening Standard at the time, and I think a bugbear with quite a few people is, why would a London-based newspaper column produce an article?
Now that's another thing. I write about Newcastle, and it's, get your bloody London nose, London, me, you know. I live in London, yeah, but I'm from Dundee, and I support Dundee. So I support a team. To us in Dundee, Newcastle is the soft south. So, you know, I'm not having all this sudden bloody this and sudden bloody that. I wrote, if I never wrote a piece, a word about Newcastle, people would say, typical London journalist, not interested in Newcastle. Well, I am interested in Newcastle. And when I see, as I did 3.5 years ago, when I see, just as I think Newcastle is wonderful, Newcastle United is wonderful in so many ways, when I see the supporters who I've praised in particular, when you talk about what's great about Newcastle United, number one would be the supporters. Of course it would. And we all, I've written that, but that's, I don't claim any, originality. Loads of southern softy reporters like me have written that. And but when you praise them, you praise their supporters. But when I saw the Barred You Out campaign, I didn't like it. I didn't like that, because what it does, and you remember I was talking earlier about when the fans fall out with the manager, when the fans are not happy with the manager, the players have an excuse. Now, the results at Newcastle, given that the players' bus was arriving at the away matches, and I particularly remember a Stoke match where the whole away support seemed to be holding up Barred You Out banners, and when the players arrive at a ground and they see everybody holding up Barred You Out banners, are they going to listen to his team talk? Is that going to help Newcastle United Football Club get a result? No, it's not. It's bad supporting, in my opinion. Now, you can say, as you will, and I'll forestall you, you can say, no, 3.5 years later, look at us now. Well, what position are you in the league right now?
10th.
And what position were you when Alan Pardew left you?
10.
Because he couldn't start. Exactly. So you're exactly where you were when Alan Pardew left you. And I'm not. Listen, I'll tell you another. I'll give you another question. You say, is Pardew your mate or something? Why did you support Pardew? I'd never met Pardew in my life. The only thing I knew about Pardew when I wrote that column 3.5 years ago, the only things I knew about Pardew I didn't like. Nudging the linesman, a couple of other things he'd done, which I'd slagged off, by the way. Nobody ever bloody remembers that, which I'd slagged off. And another thing, which was a personal thing, that he did on a social occasion when I didn't meet him, but he did something. I mean, it's nothing terrible, you know, but I just thought, what? What a pillock. So that is all I thought. The only things I knew about Pardew, who I'd never met in my life, were negative. I wrote that because I didn't think it was helping Newcastle United to get results. I thought that for Pardew to get Newcastle, and they weren't 10th in the league when I wrote that column, they were a bit lower, because they then went on a great run and he won manager, month, but he was doing brilliantly. Absolutely. They beat Chelsea, only team to beat Chelsea that season in the league. Beat Chelsea. Bloody hell, what more do you want? The only team to beat Chelsea. You must have been... Were you booing that?
You're going to have to let me talk here, buddy. You're going to have to let me count on this, because...
I know what you're doing.
Right. Now, I'll see if I can get the young one. Yeah, go for it. Pardew had us in 10th when he left. There's no two ways about it. You know, there's the fact. So, the issues we have with Pardew were... You had he was an absolute apologist for the Ashley regime, and he was sycophantic towards Ashley.
That's true.
He lied. I mean, they're on record. There are lies there. He took us through record runs of defeats, record runs of not scoring. The football was turgid. He was tactically inept. And don't get me wrong, we were 10th. But to compare a Rafa Benitez and Newcastle United now in 10th with that Pardew's, that Pardew team in 10th, it's so different. We've got a manager who doesn't talk shit. He gives everything for the club. Mm. The fans love his openness and his honesty. He's such a good manager, and he ties into the mindset of the city.
Yeah,
whereas
that's right.
Pardew you've got a negative opinion. He does come across as a bit of a used car salesman. There's no two ways about it. You know, he's a The Newcastle fans had no belief, because he was more or less a puppet for a regime that has done so much damage over the years. I'm probably veering at the side of getting like rather apoplectic about Pardew, so I'll let Andrew go on, because he can maybe articulate himself slightly better than I can.
I understand every word of it.
Pardew was on sort of hiding to nothing with us from the very start. Yeah. You think Chris Hughton was an absolute hero, and
nobody more than me, I can promise you.
Yeah, to this day, still comes back and gets the Gallagher singing his name, which is like.
Yeah,
unheard of really for an opposition manager.
And he's a southerner as well, by the way.
A southerner.
Those pesky cockneys.
A fake Irishman.
So he was on sort of hiding nothing, and I think that season where we finished fifth, I think some Newcastle fans did take to him for a while.
Mm.
But there was just incidents of just nonsense that would come out of his mouth, and I think
that's right.
Newcastle fans... Bobby Robson's a long time ago, but that kind of gentleman running the club. I mean, Glenn Roeder had a little bit of it, but
they booed Bobby Robson, you know.
Yeah,
when he
that was when he dropped Keegan for England. That's a different era, and it's not it's not connected to how we took him as a manager, by the way.
The Alan Pardew incident with Pellegrino. He's not nothing to you as
when
far as
when he called him old cunt, are you referring to?
We shouldn't use that word on the podcast. the incident at Hull with David Myler, I mean, things like that just instantly for me was just like,
who's this? Quite apart from the linesman thing. So I think, I've got no axe to grind for Alan Pardew. What I was concerned about, And to go back, Norman, to what you say, now, had the fans been holding up signs saying, Pardew out, Benitez in, I wouldn't have written that article. I would have thought, that's brilliant. That's terrific. That is, but you know, and I know, that you were holding, in effect, those people who were holding up those cards, were holding up cards which may as well have said, Pardew out, Carver in. Now, Carver is not a football manager. He's a very good coach, but he's not a football manager. He is a good coach. Bobby Robson thought so. Everybody acknowledges that. You may not think so, but he's all right. He's a respectable coach. He's respected by a lot of people. He was a hopeless manager, but not as bad as the guy you then replaced him with, Steve McLaren, who's also a coach, not a manager. Now, you were in effect, if you were holding up a Pardew out thing, you were holding up in effect a card saying Pardew out, two duffers in, and relegation, please. You weren't saying there wasn't a single person holding up, and you be honest about it. There wasn't a single person there holding up a banner thinking, if we can just get rid of Pardew, we'll get somebody as good as Rafa Benitez in.
No,
even you can't pretend.
I will counter that, Paddy.
You can't pretend. Listen, you can say, Paddy, you've made a fool of yourself because now we are 10th.
No, no.
Now we are 10th in the league pointing upwards. When you wrote that article, we were 10th in the league pointing downwards, and that's all the difference in the world. And if you were to say to me, Paddy, is that true? Will you finally admit that? Yes,
right.
You do.
Right. Well, I wasn't going to suggest that you say that. I tell you what, I was going to say was, if you, how many clubs want a manager out and have a suggested replacement up on a straight
away?
Right.
So you can't take a chance with your club. No, you can't take a chance with your club saying we don't give us stuff if we go into the second division, because you might have gone in the third division, because that's what happened. It's going to happen to Sunderland this year. That's what happened to Leicester. They came back pretty well, I think. Southampton. So it's a very dangerous game that you played. Thank God it's all come right.
But any club and any set of fans who are disillusioned with the management have got to be able to express themselves, which is what we did. And to a certain extent, you know, we have been vindicated, given Pardew's subsequent record. The other thing as well is that does it not indicate how utterly loathed Pardew was on Tyneside, given that I'm not representing the whole fan base here. I'm talking about this as a personal opinion. I remember getting to the stage, and I never held a placard up saying Pardew out. But at the same time, I'm not going to lie, of course I didn't want to be the manager of that club. Is it not indicative of how universally loathed and disrespected he was on Tyneside that we were actually prepared to take the risk of somebody like John Carver taking over?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I agree with that. And look, there is no question that you are in the Newcastle United Football Club is in an infinitely better place now, although the league position hasn't changed much, infinitely better place now than when the fans were expressing disgruntlement with Pardew. Of course that's true. I just felt at the time, and you may say that circumstances have proved me wrong. I wouldn't mind that. But Jesus Christ, if that was the worst mistake, writing that piece had been the worst mistake I'd made in my football writing career. You try it, by the way. You two bloody try writing a column every day for 40 years or whatever it is, and see if you have a perfect 100% record at the end.
Did you sanction the headline? The Newcastle fan should apologise. Did you sanction that?
No, listen, that's another thing. That's another thing. I'm glad you asked about that, because, and every journalist will tell you this, that with headlines, and I don't want to criticize sub-editors because they have a hard job, but with headlines that either undercook the piece or overcook it. This was an instance, and they often were at the Evening Standard, where I would roll my eyes at the headline and I would think, oh, I never said that. I never quite said that. Because the headline said something about Newcastle fans should now apologise to Alan Pardew. Well, I hinted at that, but as a device, as a writing device. What I was saying was, they all say, Paddy Barclay called Newcastle fans fools. Now, what I said was, there are times when people make fools of themselves. Now, I make a fool of myself. You could say, right now, with Newcastle going definitely on the way up under a great manager, that I've made a fool of myself there. And if you said that, I would argue against it, but I wouldn't be crying for 3.5 years about it. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. I don't regret writing that column, even though it sort of hasn't aged very well in the 3.5 years. But I don't regret writing that column because I liked writing it at the time. And if I hadn't written that column, you boys wouldn't be here, and I've been really enjoying this. So, but yeah, I mean, I definitely wasn't. One thing I would like to say, that the people who said, you know, Christ, you must be dating Alan Pardew, you couldn't have been more wrong. I have met him since, once.
Was he trying to sell you a second-hand car? Or
No, but I will say that he didn't say thank you very much. I felt like saying to him, you know, I've taken piles of pelters for you. you could at least say thank you, but I didn't expect
when
that.
When you're the king, you can do anything. Was that Pardew's line? When you're the king, you can do anything? Yeah, there you go.
I tell you what, he's definitely not lacking in self-confidence, but I don't think he's that bad. I don't think he's a bad manager. I think he's a decent manager, but I think that, now, I mean, obviously, support, you can't demand support. You can't demand that supporters like you, and Newcastle fans didn't like him one little bit. But, and even the ones who would never have held up a Pardew out banner. Also, I thought, didn't like him, didn't find him a sympathetic character. So you can't deny people's right to do that. But what you can't do as well is not, I mean, in my opinion, I just think it's a shame that people don't understand that a journalist who's, and you know, it's almost as if you're confusing me with other people, because a journalist who's goes back a long way with Newcastle United, who still would love, in fact, I'm going to a game because some lads have invited me, so I'm going to a game as soon as I can. I'll probably be murdered, but I mean,
I think you'll be out of it. I don't know about the murder. Right. I mean, you know, but assaulted, maybe.
I think they might be holding up Paddy Barclay out cards. I love going there, and it's been too long since. That is what I object to. I slightly resent, or it saddens me that people don't realise, that the people think that for some reason I'm toffee nosed or not respectful about Newcastle United and its fans. That could not be more wrong. Why otherwise would I have written over and over again and said on Sky that the Premier League owes Newcastle for its wealth and its allure as much as any other club? Okay, you haven't won a trophy. I wrote all the time. I don't care if Keegan's team hasn't won a trophy. It's done something more important than that. It's entertained, and for me, for the romance and the allure of football, Newcastle did as much in not winning a league for a few years, but entertaining people richly, as Leicester did by winning the league. Mm. That's how big Newcastle's achievement was under Keegan. For me, that's my personal opinion. Now, I don't mind people laughing at me for that and saying, but where's the trophy? Where's the trophy? That's my opinion as well, but that's a pro-Newcastle opinion. The only other time I ever got into trouble with Newcastle fans was when I said, I can remember it, again in the London Evening Standard, why don't you buy the club? It was basically, what did Ashley pay for the club? It was...
Well, he didn't conduct due diligence, did he? So yeah. He got away with paying like a couple hundred million for it?
No, it was less. It was
150 million.
Really? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, I suggested, you know, Newcastle, I've got they're always very proud of the fact that they have a huge fan base. You know, take out a mortgage, you know, get a grand, or put a grand in or something like that and buy it. I worked out the sums on the back of a fag packet. It was just a 300-word column, you know. But I just felt, you know, of all the places, you know, you'll both be aware of the bond between Newcastle United and Athletic Bilbao. Mm-hmm. Now, Athletic Bilbao, 53,000 capacity stadium, same as yours, more or less. Probably more empty seats at their place.
Depends on who they're playing, doesn't
it? Yeah. But, you know, very similar seaport stripes, even better tradition than Newcastle in one sense, in that they've got total ethnic purity, you know, only boys from the
Basque region,
greater Basque region, yeah. You know, can play. But a hugely successful, I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, but they are owned by the fans. Now, for me, I can't think of a club in the whole, a top club, I'm not talking about Portsmouth, who are a, could be fan a top club, but they were a fan-owned club until a few months ago, with 20,000 gates, but I can't think of a 50,000 gate club that's more appropriate to fan ownership. So I wrote that piece, and I got a few people saying, get your nose out of our business, which was, you know, was fair enough in that case. But if the fans had done it, they'd be sitting on 100% profit, nearly, which they could either take, put it in their pockets, because a lot of people said, how can we afford £1,000? Are you on another planet? You can afford £1,000. I said, well, you pay £1,000 for your season ticket. I'm just asking you to double it, and you own the club. Well, they could have taken 150 million or 100 million profit now, or given the manager 100 million to buy on a couple of new players. So I didn't think that was that stupid an idea. It was a bit outlandish, and I don't blame people, because I wasn't putting money in my pocket. I was asking them to take money out of their pockets. But that I got into trouble. But it was only because I want Newcastle to have, not to be dependent on which sugar daddy it is. You know, I don't want Newcastle United in an ideal world. And I'm not doing anything I wouldn't do for my own club. I voted for fan ownership at Dundee FC. It's all right, tiny club, you know, you could laugh at us. But, you know, to me, it's the club I love. And so I voted for that at our club. And I'm a member of the society. So there's nothing I don't believe in for myself, but I was prescribing it for Newcastle. That was only through affection for the club and a desire to see it... to see the fans have the place in the club that, in my opinion, they deserve. I mean, they pay the money, why can't they have the ownership? So that was all that was. So there's nothing really that... Do you not think when you beat Chelsea 1-0, when you scored that goal, Tiote goal, do you not think I was punching the air? Do you not think as a neutral... I was punching the air when those moments happened, and I could mention millions of others. Do you not think I was hoping that you'd beat Liverpool in those 4-3s? Because there was still a feeling that Newcastle were the underdogs in that, even though actually the teams were well matched. But because Newcastle haven't won a trophy, do you not think I was supporting? And do you not think I'm not unusual for that? I just think people should know that. People should know what we actually are, rather than think that people like me are some kind of ivory tower, professorial, pompous bastards sitting in a house by a river, not knowing anything about football, not knowing anything about the heart and the soul of football. So,
yeah, I mean,
there we are.
I think probably social media doesn't help in that respect, because it just opens
it
up the whole...
But you see... If there's you two lads are here in my house, and it's brilliant because we can talk like we could down the pub, but that's that's much nicer for me than people, because you get, and it's not just the people talk about keyboard warriors, and yeah, that is true, the brave, you know, the way you are when you're in the car, you're making wanker signs at people, you don't really want to fight them, you know.
Yeah.
But so there is an element of that, but it also works the other way around. The people who are on the other end sometimes take it too seriously. Like somebody says, you know, something like, Paddy, you've done something, you've ballsed up this time. And instead of realizing that the guy's just digging you in the ribs and saying, I think you've ballsed up this time, you say, no, I haven't. Newcastle were 10th in the league. Pardew's decent manager, blah, blah, blah. So it can work both ways. But if you're talking like this, that's all right. We can argue, we can disagree, but if you buy me a pint, I'll say anything. No.
Yeah.
Go on, you've got another.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I'm talking too much.
No, you're not talking too much at all. It's great.
No, this is excellent. So I think we've got. Do you think there's a responsibility in the media to call out fellow journalists when they're disparaging a whole set of people by spouting what amount to ultimately subjective?
Yeah, that kind of goes over.
Yeah, well, can I add to that? I'll add to that.
Yeah, right.
I think there is, and again, you know what? Like, I'm a Newcastle fan, obviously. Yeah. I'm all around defensive about my club, like we all are, like anyone other football club is.
I am.
But there is this kind of and I think it's a media engendered myth of Newcastle fans. We don't like cockies, that's horse shit. I mean, you know, Robert Lee, Les Ferdinand, Chris Hughton, Dana, let's just put that one to bed, that in my opinion.
Yeah, right.
We want a Geordie manager. Matthew Syed from the Times, I think in 2008, wrote an article. His article, right, the one Shearer's manager, the one Shepherd as chairman, the one
I read that.
It was all Geordie, and you just, I mean, I suppose it ties in that question, these myths that are created, do you not think that wholly irresponsible?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. The only thing I would say in the past, not now, but in the past, I probably criticised Newcastle fans. I wouldn't say criticised, but I observed that they were a little bit starstruck, and that, you know, the McDonald thing was a case in point. If a player as good as McDonald had been sold from my club, I'd have been
furious.
I'd have lost sleep. I'd have been crying, you know. But the plain fact is that the Newcastle United results did not collapse. In fact, they slightly improved. And I think that for a long time there was a feeling that Newcastle fans were, you know, they liked a good number nine, you know, like a Milburn or something, or much later other ones, and that they needed a player to believe in, and that there was maybe a bit too easily satisfied from that point of view, and I might have voiced that, but the piece that you were quoting to me sounds to me like a bit more like a knockabout comedy act, because, and I wouldn't have written that, no.
Yeah.
No, I would not have written that, because I don't buy into the cliches about it, about Newcastle United, because frankly I've seen, you know, right back 40 years ago, you know, I'm talking about that Lee Dennis team that, yeah, the football was just brilliant, and it was very modern football. You know, it was very, very tactical. I mean, Gordon Lee was not a tactically particularly astute manager, but Dennis was a brilliant coach. You know, and they were great to watch. So, you know, I don't take. I watch Newcastle now, under Benitez. They're very. Probably too tactically aware.
No. Wait, David, this is another myth that will shatter.
Right.
This whole.
You don't want attack.
It's another myth, is it not, Andrew? You know, feel free to disagree.
Yeah, yeah.
But this kind of, again, this media engendered myth of Newcastle fans, we'd rather, you know, lose 4-3 than win 1-0. I mean, that's absolute horseshit.
Yeah.
I don't know any Newcastle fans, and again, you know, I don't profess to know 52,000 fans.
Yeah.
I know a handful of mates. We. Under Benitez, what's appreciated, I think, by you, especially people in my kind of support, my network of supporters, is that we've got a manager who is highly intelligent and plays tactical football and utilises the resources he's got the best way that he can.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
A 1-0 victory against Man United at home with the kind of possession, they're letting them have all the possession. The Arsenal game on Sunday, we had 27% of the ball. It was a beautiful experience to watch it. I don't know what you think about that, Andrew, but this, again, it ties in that myth of we want attacking football all the time.
But that's... sorry.
So, yeah, I think the point you make, yes, it's all right when we win. But
you'll take it for a few years. That was a rude sign there. I'm calling you out, Norman.
Yeah.
You're making a rude sign as a co-presenter. That's terrible. But... he'll probably say it was justified. But,
I was waving at
them. I can totally understand that, and a lot of clubs supporters. You see, you're talking about you're much younger than that. I'm going back all the way to, for example, one cliche that I trotted out while it was true, and then dropped when it became a true cliche, was that Newcastle fans would rather win the cup than the league. Now, there was a time when that was true. There was a time when everybody, I can just about remember a time when, given a choice between the league and the cup, probably Man United fans even would have been not sure. So that was true for a bit, but then it became a cliche. So I like to think I dropped it. Maybe a bit too late, but because I felt that during the Shearer time, I always, when the third round of the cup came round, even when Shearer was playing for Newcastle, I would look at Newcastle's draw in the cup and think, oh, they're not going to win the league, but it'd be great to see them at Wembley, although they played like drains when they did get there. And poor Gary Speed did Keane, didn't he? Put Keane out of the game early on. The late lamented Gary Speed.
Yeah.
He injured Keane in the early
99 final, yeah. Was that? That's right, I was there. Oh, God, let's not talk about that.
Eh? Yeah. It was a non-performance, wasn't it? But anyway, so that was probably a cliche that I get. But you see, you, both of you, are of the modern fan. And the modern fan, who gets criticised quite a bit, but one thing that modern fans are now is much, much more tactically sophisticated. And as you say, you're not bothered about 27% possession if your 27% possession is put to better use than the opposition's 73. Yeah. 73. Right, 73. Yeah, 73.
73.
Yeah,
73.
Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. Yeah, 73. I hope you wouldn't see that kind of stuff now. People talking about Newcastle preferring to win, lose 3-4 than.
Yeah, I think. Well,
I hope you wouldn't see that now. But I mean, people look upon. I look upon Newcastle now, as a chance. Newcastle United as a chance to really do something for a club that, in my opinion, should be in the top six every year. I really do believe that. And I've been saying that since they were in the top six. Well, I mean, you were... It never,
ironically,
it,
that was underneath Pardew.
It never, you were actually in the top... But that was a fleeting...
Once fifth.
A fleeting glimpse, because what happened there was the same as... has happened to a lot of clubs, that when you play the same, you get no injuries and you've got no distractions. You play the same team every week.
Absolutely.
You finish fifth.
Yeah.
You then have Thursday, Sunday. You can't cope with it. You're dropping players when they're fit. They don't like you for it, and you ended up 14th, 15th, something like that in the next season when you were
16th. The next season, 16th. Yeah, it was only the second 16th. Last game of the season where we avoided relegation.
Let me just tell you something that it's out of context. This is harking back to something we were saying before. And but it's to do with Pardew, and it's to do with Benitez. When Benitez at Chelsea was in the same situation as Pardew was at Newcastle. The fans hated him and they were never going to like him. And what Benitez did at Chelsea was phenomenal. Because every fan, pretty well, not every fan, but a large number of the fans wanted, and they would talk, I know them because, being a London-based softy Southern journalist, I know them. And they were telling me, we hope we lose today because we want that bastard out. Now, he goes to Newcastle, and if he went down the street and farted, everyone said, it smells lovely today, doesn't it? So, I was just as critical of Chelsea fans then as I was. It may not have been printed in Newcastle, but I was just as critical as Chelsea fans about Benitez then as I was once about Newcastle fans. So it's the same thing. If you drive a wedge between the players and the crowd, if there is a wedge between the players and the crowd, between the manager and the crowd, the players have an excuse. That's all I was saying.
It's just Alex here again from the True Faith podcast. A quick message before we leave you with the final 15 minutes of the show. If you like these podcasts that we do about an extra 20 podcasts a month of bonus content for subscribers. It's £5 a month, £1.25 a week for 4 extra podcasts per week on all things Newcastle United and football. So if you like what we hear, please have a look at that. The link is on our social media on Twitter and Facebook at TF Weekly Pod, and also in the description of this podcast. Loads of people, hundreds have signed up so far and say they really enjoy it. And you might, if you enjoy these podcasts, have a look at it. I'm going to leave you with Paddy talking about how much he enjoyed coming up to Newcastle when he started out in journalism. And also he has a good anecdote about the late, great Sir Bobby Robson.
But I used to love, I was based in Manchester, but I used to love going up to Newcastle, not only because of the atmosphere. And they had this press box, not nice view like it is now. The press box, you had to go up a spiral staircase to the press box, which was right on the top of the stand. It was the highest point in the ground. I mean, we used to think that the directors were hoping that the wind would blow us to our deaths.
Must be cold
up there. we'd blow the press box onto the running track, and we'd never, and we wouldn't be a pain to the club in ever again. But it was lovely. But I liked it as much as well as the team and the football and the atmosphere. And honestly, when I talked before about walking through the city centre to the ground, which now looks, it looked good then, but it looks phenomenal now because of that. The way it's, a building, it's the architecture is less important than the way it sits on a slight incline. And the view of St. James Park is something I've got lots of happy memories. I remember Bobby Robson driving me. I wanted actually to walk back down the town, but he insisted on driving me up from an interview down to the station, so I got my train. Wonderful man, Robson. Oh, fantastic man, always thinking of other people, And, to go back to the first instance, I can't honestly remember the game. All I could remember would be that Natras and Craig and Cassidy and Gowling would have been playing, Stuart Barraclough on the wing. And that I liked the football. It was a little bit slow tempo for some of the fans, a little bit patient build-up, but in those days, I hesitate to add, the fans here would be fine with it because they're more pragmatic. But it was not so much that, but I used to get on great with the lads, the journalists, and the nightlife was phenomenal. We used to go, I can remember when the boats started,
The Tuxedo.
Tuxedo Junction, it was first called, and then it became Tuxedo Princess and all this. Royal. And we used to go to a club called Gray's Club, and sometimes the players would come in, because they're
idea of an energy drink was a few pints in, after the game, you know, in those days.
Yeah.
And so the players would sometimes come in, but we didn't bother them, you know. But I didn't, because I've always been shy of players. 40 years, and I was always too shy. I was always tongue-tied talking to players. How the hell I ever made 40 years in the business, I'll never know. I was I idolized players instead of treating them as workmates, you know, the way a proper journalist would. But anyway, that's by the way. But the nightlife was good. I couldn't really describe it here because it incriminated my fellow scribes, but
yeah.
Christ, we had some nights in Newcastle. So it was the whole package, really. It was the town that we loved so much, and so that's it. And so I would have thought the last people I would ever fall out with was Newcastle fans, but I hope it's all right now, and I hope they'll accept my abject apology for dissing them.
Yeah, well, I think me and Norman can accept your apology.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Right.
Yeah,
well, you can speak for all the other ones, and then
no, we definitely can't do that.
And then when I get to that game, I'll apologise personally and abjectly to everybody who buys me a Newcastle brand.
Right.
Well, there you go.
Now, what else? Is there anything else we need to do?
I've got a couple of questions. Yeah, you just touched on Bobby Robson there. Yeah, I'm guessing in your time in journalism and covering Newcastle, I suppose Bobby's probably the favourite that you've had out of them. Have you got any good Bobby Robson stories?
Only nice ones, really. I mean, of interviewing him, I'll tell you one. When I mentioned to you earlier that I was always a bit shy with players and managers because I idolised them. I wish I was them. I wished I was them, you know. So I suppose I was a bit shy. And anyway, it was when I first started covering England, which is when you get to becoming what they rather pretentiously call a number one, you know, a chief football correspondent, you get to cover England. I mean, I'm obviously a Scotland supporter, but... You know, so it was to me. It was demotion, but no, seriously, I knew you got a bigger run at the England thing, and you got more trips, so which were always the best part of the job. And I found he was the England manager, and I found out that he was covering one of England's opponents in a World Cup. I can't remember who it was. No, it was a friendly, and he was going to watch Czechoslovakia, who were England's last opponents before they went to a particular World Cup. I can't remember which one.
Was it Italia 90 when Steve Ball scored a beautiful two?
And it was the game, the friendly against Czechoslovakia. It was the game when Gaza came in.
That's right. And Steve Ball scored.
They won 4. That's right. They won 4-2. Gaza was man of the match, and he was on the plane to the World Cup. So, I think that was the game. But anyway, I found out that I was the only reporter going to watch Czechoslovakia before this friendly. Why I went to what, I don't know. But I was on a flight to Prague to watch their star player, who I can't remember who it was at the time. And they said, the FA told me, Mr. Robson's going to that. So I saw him at a game just 2 or 3 days before the flight. I said, Bobby, And he by then he knew my name because I'd introduced myself when I was covering England. And he says, yeah, yeah. What is it, son? I said, well, I'm going to the game in Prague that you're going to, and I think I'm on the same flight coming back. He said, yeah, yeah, all right. And I knew he'd be in the business class and I'd be in the cheap seats. But I said, I was just wondering if... after the game, on the flight back, I could come up and see you. He says, yeah, yeah. And ask for your impressions of the Czech team for my article. He says, yeah, no problem, son. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. And I realised the conversation was over. I thought, well, I'll go now before he changed my mind. So I scuttled off. And he says, Patrick! And I turned round and I was thinking, oh, he's changed his mind. And he points to me. He says, don't be shy. Now,
that still sends shivers up my spine, because all he was worried about, he'd sensed that I was a little bit overawed about him, and he didn't want me to be frightened of approaching him on that plane coming back. He says, "Don't be shy. Come up to me on the plane." And I just thought, what a fantastic bloke, you know? How thoughtful is that? He didn't need to say anything. He called me back. But, you know, I think if you spoke to any journalist, you know, that it would probably be on their conscience, the stick they gave him when he was England manager. But they belt every England manager, you know, so that's it. That would be my favourite memory of him, as well as the other one that I told you about, when he insisted on getting his 4x4 out of the car pound at Newcastle and driving me. I could probably have walked it quicker, you know, to my train.
Yeah.
But he said, "Oh, if you're getting the 4:28, I'd better make sure you get there." You know, I mean, this is one of the most distinguished managers, because by then, you know, he was God and royalty, yeah. And that was Bobby Robson. So to me, it's not all about the great feats that he achieved, not just in Newcastle, but, you know, Holland, Barcelona, England, ultimately. Ipswich, yeah. Probably the greatest. So it wasn't just that. It was that he was just such a fantastic bloke. And I bet if you spoke to any journalist,
yeah,
they would say the same.
Yeah, I think it was the only Newcastle manager, or sort of. If people talk about Shearer and Keegan with Newcastle fans, but you still hear Bobby Robson's name sang at Newcastle games.
The other thing is that he did a lot for sort of awareness of the Geordie. I don't know, it was John Hall's rather corny phrase, but about the Geordie nation. But he definitely, you know, increased awareness of Geordiness,
yeah.
you might say, because he was ultimately respected not just in the northeast but equally anywhere. If you went to Suffolk or actually Manchester,
yeah,
you know, they'd be saluting his memory.
Sunderland fans who even have a soft spot for Bobby. Yeah. So
do they?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I wasn't going to say that. But yeah, I've learned something today.
I know a few of them.
Yeah.
I think that just about wraps it up. So I'm just going to say thank you on behalf of both of us.
Thank you. Because honestly, I've been wanting this for a long, long time. So thank you very, very much for travelling all the way from
Lewisham.
Wandsworth.
Oh, is it Wandsworth? Yeah. You're from? Yeah. It's been great. So thank you very much. It's going to be really good to speak to you sort of a little more directly. To my friends at the Gallagher.
Yes, well, you have to remember to unblock us on Twitter after this.
Oh yes,
we can all.
What,
be,
so you can slug me off.
We can all be friends again.
Yes,
and,
I hope so. Yeah.
You know, hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay,
cool. Cheers, buddy.
Thank you.
Cheers.